I'm John Wheeler, and you're listening to This Week in Nuclear, the only podcast that brings weekly news, facts, and commentary on the commercial nuclear power industry in the United States and around the world. Welcome. You're listening to This Week in Nuclear, Sunday, January 8th, 2006, episode number 3. The biggest thing in the news this week is the on-again, off-again negotiations between representatives from Iran and Russia regarding the nature of the Iranian nuclear power program. In order to get a full picture on the current events, we really need to review the history of the Iranian nuclear program. Iran has no operational nuclear power plants. They have one partially completed 1,000 megawatt light water reactor of Russian design. Construction was originally begun in 1974 on two German 1,300 megawatt plants, but was stopped in 1979 during the Iranian Revolution. In the early 1990s, construction on Unit 1 was recommenced with Russia's assistance, and the plant design was changed to build the Russian 1,000 megawatt plant inside the structure that was originally designed for the German plant. This unit is nearing completion, but construction on the original Unit 2 was not recommenced after it was halted many years ago. Since 1993, Iran has been developing the capability to enrich uranium. This is allowed under the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty, provided the enrichment is for use in power reactors and not for weapons development. Iran says it's interested in enrichment to make nuclear fuel, but the European Union and the United States and an increasing number of other nations say Iran wants the technology to make weapons-grade uranium for nuclear warheads. Iran's assertions that their enrichment activities are for power plants doesn't pass the sanity test. Iran does not have enough indigenous uranium resources to fuel even one reactor over its lifetime, so it can never be self-sufficient for producing fuel for nuclear power plants. It does have quite enough uranium, though, to make several nuclear bombs. In addition, international inspectors discovered uranium enriched to 15% in one of Iran's facilities. Power plants use fuel enriched only to a few percent. The only use of 15% enriched uranium is in weapons. A growing number of nations have expressed concern over Iran's nuclear ambitions. And late last year, Russia attempted to negotiate with Iran to stop its enrichment activities in exchange for a guarantee of fuel for the power plant. In addition, Russia offered to host Iranian scientists and provide enrichment facilities in Russia for Iran's use in developing its nuclear power plant fuel cycle. It sounded like a pretty sweet deal for the Iranians. But in late December, the Iranians walked away from the negotiating table and reaffirmed their right as a nation to develop nuclear technology. Then last week, Iran announced they would resume their, quote, nuclear research activities, fueling yet another level of concern from the world community. I did a little more research on this nuclear research activity that Iran is proposing to recommence and discovered that it is, in fact, operational testing of centrifuge equipment used to enrich uranium to the level needed for nuclear weapons. The International Atomic Energy Agency asked Iran to explain its decision to restart its enrichment activities, but the Iranian delegation abruptly returned to Tehran last week and failed to show up at the meeting. Then on Saturday, January 8th, talks resumed between Russia and Iran aimed at putting the crisis to rest. And these talks are ongoing as we speak. Iran seems to be intent on resuming their enrichment activities tomorrow, January 9th. Underlying all this are the Iranian president's recent aggressive anti-Israel remarks and concern that Israel or the U.S. might choose to take preemptive military action to destroy the Iranian enrichment facilities. I believe this is unlikely, at least not until after the next United Nations Security Council meeting, which will be held in February. We'll certainly be watching these events, and I'll keep you up to date as things progress. On a lighter note, this news comes from Seabrook, New Hampshire, home of the Seabrook Nuclear Power Plant, which is owned by FPL Energy. The Seabrook Town Board recently approved $50,000 for a feasibility study to decide whether or not the town should pursue buying the Seabrook Nuclear Power Plant from its current owner, FPL Energy. Fred Welch, the town manager, was quoted as saying, FPL Energy bought the plant for $844 million and it makes $150 to $200 million of profit a year. The town could really use that money. Yeah, well, no kidding. What's a little more scary is that Fred Welch was quoted as saying that the town could take the plant by eminent domain. What's even more laughable is the town board actually approved the measure to study the feasibility. There was only one dissenting vote, a Miss Cora Stockbridge, who stated she felt the $50,000 was better spent on vehicles. Now, who are these people kidding? Do they actually believe that the Nuclear Regulatory Commission would approve transferring the operating license from FPL Energy to the town of Seabrook? I cannot believe the voters of Seabrook elected these bozos to office. And what I really wonder is whose brother-in-law owns the engineering company that's doing the feasibility study. In another similar story, the Entergy Corporation plans to apply for a license renewal for the Pilgrim Nuclear Station later this year. And the town of Plymouth, Massachusetts, where the plant is located, is using this event as an opportunity to extract more taxes from the utility. The heart of the issue is a $10 million annual payment that the town receives from the plant's former owner in a deal that went into effect in 1998 when the plant was sold. The town is faced with losing that revenue when the agreement expires in 2008, and they're trying to get Entergy to pay more in taxes to make up the difference. The Boston Globe reported that Entergy pays the town about $1.5 million per year in taxes. The town claims that the evacuation plans are inadequate and that the system of fallout shelters in place do not meet current needs. The utility spokesperson affirmed that they are interested in hearing the town's concern, and the cordial discussions had already taken place on the matter. The current evacuation plan was designed and approved by the state of Massachusetts with input from the town of Plymouth. Peter Judge of the Massachusetts State Department of Emergency Management stated, quote, "We feel the plan is solid and it's something that we take very seriously," unquote. An NRC spokesperson said that none of the issues raised by the town will affect the license renewal. Here's a quick question for my listeners. Since when were nuclear power plants responsible for fallout shelters in their community? Nuclear power plants cannot explode like atomic bombs, and to me this is an indication that the Plymouth officials have either been watching too much science fiction or are listening to anti-nuclear activists that routinely compare power plants to nuclear weapons. Let's face it, the town got a sweet deal when the plant was sold. $10 million a year for 10 years. If my memory serves me correctly, that's more than the cost of the plant. Now the deal is winding down and they want even more. That doesn't sound fair. Russia's curtailment of the natural gas supplies to Europe last week have sparked a heated debate in Germany about reviving their nuclear power program. Since Germany began shutting down its nuclear power plants as part of its Green Party initiative, it has become heavily dependent on natural gas for its energy needs, and Germany imports 36% of it from Russia. Top Conservative Party members want the nuclear power issue back on the agenda at a two-day cabinet meeting next week, when the parties aim to agree on measures to stimulate the economy. And a German government spokesperson said that nuclear power would be a central theme to an energy summit to be held in March. Edmund Stoiber, head of the Christian Social Union, called for the government to go back on its agreement to close Germany's remaining reactors to reduce its dependence on energy from other countries. Russia has the world's largest supply of natural gas, and Iran has the world's second largest supply. there's growing concern by the European Union that Russia is increasingly using its position as an energy exporter as leverage in political arguments. As of 2004, Germany had 18 operational nuclear power plants that produced about 36% of the nation's electricity. Germany shut down one reactor in 2005, so that number now stands at 17 operational reactors. Over the last couple of episodes, we've talked quite a bit about the growing interest in the United States on building new nuclear power plants. I thought I'd take this opportunity to summarize where we are right now in the process. There are a number of companies that have declared an intent to file for construction and operating licenses for new nuclear plants. I'm going to go over those in alphabetical order. The Ameren Company, which operates and owns the Callaway Nuclear Station, recently declared that they plan to add an additional unit at the Callaway site, and they expect that plant to be online somewhere around 2017. Constellation Energy has declared an intent to file for COLs for either the Calvert Cliffs Station in Maryland or the 9 Mile Point Station in New York for one U.S. EPR reactor. Duke Energy has declared an intent for two AP1000 units at a location to be announced. We talked about that in our last episode. Dominion Energy is planning one ESBWR at the North Anna Station. Entergy Nuclear has two different initiatives underway, or they've individually declared intent to file for one ESBWR unit at the River Bend station in Louisiana, and as part of New Start, they have declared an intent to file for one ESBWR at the Grand Gulf station in Mississippi. And Exelon Generation is considering construction at the Clinton station. New Start Energy has filed for an intent at the Bellefonte station for one Westinghouse AP1000 unit. Progress Energy has up to four nuclear units at two sites, one in either North Carolina or South Carolina, and another in Florida. And Southern Company has an undisclosed number of plants or units planned for the Vogtle station in Georgia. And finally, Scana Energy, the owner and operator of VC Summer Station, is planning at least one unit there. None of these activities constitutes a commitment to build a new nuclear plant, but they are in fact notifying the Nuclear Regulatory Commission that they will be applying for construction and operating licenses in the near future. And it looks like most of those applications will be filed in late 2007 and early 2008. So depending on how you count it, it looks like there are 10 different companies considering at least 13 new nuclear plants in the United States. Even if a fraction of those actually result in construction, that will be a significant boom for the nuclear industry in the U.S. We'll continue talking about these initiatives as they progress through the licensing process. There are a few things I need to make clear to my podcast listeners. While I'm employed at one of the large U.S. nuclear utilities, my employer is not associated with my blog or my podcast. I'm very careful to ensure that news and facts presented in the podcast are gathered only from publicly available sources. And lastly, the opinions presented here are my own and those of my guest listeners and other participants, and are not necessarily the opinions of my employer. So that's it for this week's show. Thanks for listening, and this is John Wheeler for This Week in Nuclear. Have a great week.